Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction, and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
On today's episode of Take It From Us, I speak to Whitney Lee Banfield. Growing up, Whitney Lee and her brother faced significant hardship. We talk about how they lost their home, how they lived in a tent for years before being taken in by their grandparents. Whitney Lee talks about her battles with addiction and how she was ultimately able to break out of the cycle and find a real purpose and vocation, sharing her experiences with children and a passion for reading. Whitney Lee is an ambassador for Duffy Books and travels throughout the country inspiring kids to love reading. From great trauma and hardship can come fulfillment. Whitney Lee shares her very special story with us. Please be advised this episode deals with the issue of suicide. Before we started recording, we were having a chat about running and about exercise. How come it's so important for you? And I know this is recent for you. You've discovered you're a 10-kilometer runner. Tell us more.
No. Yeah, I've always loved running. It's been a part of me since I was a child. That was something that I always tended to go towards when I was suffering a lot of anxiety. It kind of came to me very naturally. Like when I knew I was in my own head, I'd just want to go for a run. I had so much energy about me. And it's always been a part of my life. And so since being in a really good space now, I have committed myself back to running again. Like it's such a huge part of who I am and what I do in my everyday routine and lifestyle.
Yeah. We have this chat came up this morning actually with my tennis group. I play tennis once a week every Thursday morning and we go and grab a coffee and we started to talk about mental challenges and life challenges and how all of us agree that we feel better when we're moving. And I work as a health coach in my day-to-day job.
Wow.
And often people who have lost their way and things are really hard for them, I'll ask them, hey, when was the last time you felt great about life? And it might be a few years earlier. It was when they were moving. It was when they were playing sport or it was when they were walking or running. And they've been disattached from that movement. And it just, again, ramps up for me how powerful and how good it is for our brains, how good it is for our mood when we're actually out there being active.
That's actually so true. I actually never thought of it like that. But yeah, when you know you're in a good place, when it becomes part of your routine and it honestly elevates me, makes me feel more like clarity in my life when I do it every day and I commit to it. I look forward to it every day. So I'm going to probably be like dead by the end of the run. I know that it's going to be great.
It's going to be great for you. So what does the clarity look like?
For me, obviously, like I do fight my demons through my running. Like I do try and push myself. You give it like good old half an hour afterwards and you feel a sense of like, sort of grounding for me and like a little bit like, yeah, how do you explain it? Lighter. My mind's a lot more clear because I often overthink a lot. Like I have a lot of anxiety at times. And so for me, running just helps with that. And I just don't get thoughts like I usually do. Like I tend to eat at my thoughts and think negatively and then feed on them. But with running, it just helps with it so much. And I do that every day and I commit to it. If I need a day's rest, I'll tend to go towards like yoga or meditation. Those are sort of the things I do on my little bit of a downtime when I'm resting from running.
Yeah, and I guess the running's allowing you to be present.
Yeah.
You need to think about your breathing. You have to think about your cadence. You're looking around. You've got to be mindful, don't you? Because you're not on a trip like crack and fall over and land on your shoulder.
Five thoughts as well, but they sort of diminish as you carry, kind of progress through the run.
I think that's the power of movement and the power of exercise or the power of playing sport, even casually, is that you get locked in on the task at hand. And so all that negative shit that we often ruminate on and dwell on, there's no room for it when we're actually doing these activities.
Yeah, no, totally. I agree with that. And for me, like, even with the meditation and the yoga, like, it's another form of, like, exercising, but more of a relaxed space, like, focusing on your breath and your body, but not in that intense state when you are running, which is actually another good way for me to, like, kind of keep my mind clear.
How are you with your own, when you're sitting there meditating?
Yeah.
And you're left alone with your own thoughts, how do you go with those?
So I've gone to a few yoga classes now in my years and like I've found that I've learned through I've learned through Buddhas. Monks, Indian practitioners, different types of people who teach meditation. And they taught me to always focus on breathing first before you start. And then the next phase is focusing on roots going into the ground. And then I can move into whatever I want to do with my meditation from there. And that's allowed me to just get rid of the thoughts. And if they keep coming back, I start again back to the breathing stage of counting, or 1, 2, 3, or I'll count to 10 or something. And that will allow me to get into that space of meditation.
Because the brain wanders, right? I think a lot of people are under the misapprehension that, oh man, I need to shut my brain off and I can't turn my brain off, therefore I'm no good at meditating. You cannot turn your brain off and you can't turn your thoughts off. But what you can do is bring it back to center, which I think is what you were talking about. So that way the practice becomes beneficial.
Yeah. So starting off with your breath work before you really get into it. And then from there, making sure you ground yourself. So imagining roots coming through to your body, through to the ground. And once you sort of visualize that as you possibly can, then work on through your surroundings or taking in your thoughts, but not analyzing and then pass through. Yeah.
So we'll ask you about the ambassadorial role that you carry now for Duffy Books, and I know that that's really exciting for you, but I wanted to ask you as to how you find yourself now as a voice of lived experience and helping to motivate others, but also share your story about your life and the fact that you've had many, many ups and downs.
Yeah, I started my journey opening up about my story back in July last year with Voices of Hope. That was quite scary for me, purely because that was the first time opening up to my story to my friends, to my family, to anyone that knew of me, and obviously publicly to people that don't know me. That was very terrifying. I didn't know what sort of reaction I was going to get. And from there, I actually got really positive feedback, and it actually opened up a lot of friends that were struggling internally, family that actually didn't know I had gone through that. My relationships actually deepened after I opened up about my struggles. And then I was offered to be on the podcast with Jazz Thornton on Hope is Real, and I kind of expanded on my story a bit more there and how I was brought up as a child, through to my teenage years and then adulthood. I'll be honest, I do have relapse of memories from my childhood when I do talk about my story, but it's a healing process. These things that I actually have never addressed until I start speaking about it. And so through all these things that I've done publicly has actually allowed me to heal so much more than I ever have. Even when I did my healing, before I shared my story.
Yeah. But before you've been able to share, maybe you're just not ready to share it until last year.
Maybe. Well, I did a lot of healing. I did a massive healing. I did speak about this on the campaign of Voices of Hope, how I came out of the dark side I was in. I actually was connected to a guy. His name's Simon. He has a company business in Papamoa called Akura Reiki, and he helps people with mental health issues. And he allowed me to open up myself, after I bottled up for so many years, and he cured my anxiety, my depression and suicidal ideation at the time. Yeah. So he was sort of opening it up a little bit more and more as I kept visiting him. And my whole life changed from there.
And so before that, the trauma, had you just been burying it deep?
Yeah, I did. I was going through, growing up, obviously I grew up in SIFs, and they called it SIFs at the time, family services or something, taken away from my parents at a very early age of 2. And I was bouncing around homes up until I was 7. And my brother and I, we sort of visited our family here and there in the early ages of 2 to 5, but we lost contact with them because our home was taken away from us when I was in SIFs. And we ended up living in a tent, and that's where the trauma started. There were unknown people coming to visit us in our tent, sexual abuse to physical abuse. And me and my brother, we weren't able to sort of speak up about it. We were going to school, not enough clothes, basic needs, food. We didn't even have enough food. We used to just steal fruit from trees on the side of the street. And so from there, like, that's where the trauma started, really. And then my grandparents found us at the age of 7 or 8, brought us in. But me and my brother had so many, like, problems psychologically that we ended up having to go see therapists that just couldn't deal with us. We were so complex children that we got kicked out of school. And, yeah, it was a hard childhood. My grandparents put a lot of love into us. But my teenage years really, really came out where I started trying to commit suicide.
Which part of New Zealand did you grow up in?
I grew up in Tauranga. So I lived quite central when I was in SIFS. And my grandparents, I think they were local at the time. And then when we did move into their house, they moved away into the countryside, which allowed my brother and I to kind of see the farm life and get away from the city that we knew. Which really changed my perspective on culture and the people that I surrounded myself with. Yeah, but those sort of stages of life, I was sort of going through the psychological part of it, the trauma. The teenage years was when I really started to feed into the suicidal ideation. And then adulthood, that's when I started attracting unhealthy relationships to do with my mental health. Which obviously expanded into a really crappy lifestyle, if you put it that way. Yeah.
Were there drugs involved?
There was, yes. I was about 22. Actually we'll go, but before that, maybe 20. I was 20. I started getting involved with drugs. I won't say heavy stuff, but I will say like a lot of, smoking marijuana to a point where it became a, every day, recreational thing at work, when I wake up, when I go to sleep, it was just part of my life, anything to not feel like I was sober. And this was with a guy that I had spent about 4 and a bit years with, and we were both mentally unwell, in and out of mental health services. And I don't even know how I was able to function, to be honest. I was just getting through day by day to my job. Yeah. So that was tough, and that went on, yeah, for quite a few years until I met this guy who does Reiki. Mm.
Yeah, and you're in a position now where if you look back on those years of hardship, is it tough to figure out that you're in a far different position now?
Yeah, I was thinking about this morning before I was about to jump on here today, like, I don't even recognize that person that I was back then because I've done so much of the work to get out of that. I'll be honest with you. I had psychosis moments when I was in my early 20s. I would ring my grandparents and my mother saying I'm going to kill myself because I couldn't cope with the feelings that I would get. They would come in waves. They don't just sit. They sit with you, these thoughts, but these particular moments that I used to get, I would just want to go and harm myself. There was no doubt about, like, you just want an escape out. Like, I would have them in throughout the day. There'd be like a couple episodes and I would just want to hurt myself. That's when my grandmother stepped in and said, I need you to come home because I don't think you're safe to be by yourself, where you're living. And so she used to sleep with me in bed just so that I wouldn't do anything to myself. When that went on for a few months, I quit my job. I was on the sick benefit. I couldn't even pick up a phone because I was that distraught. Like, my emotional state was out the window. Couldn't even pick up a phone. And then she said to me, I think you should go and see this guy. He's going to help you with whatever you're going through. Because the pills, they'll drug me out with the medication. I just overdose on them. All the meds that the doctor would give me wasn't working. And then they stopped giving me so much in one go. So they would only feed me, 3 days worth a week, and then I've got to go back to the pharmacy to pick it up because I just wanted to commit suicide off them. Like, I was just done. I was just so ready to do it. And she said, no, I think we need to try something else. It's just, this is not working. Yeah.
So she pushed you to the light reach.
She asked me, look, I need you to go and study about it first. I don't really want to put you in somewhere where you might not understand or it might be too much for you. She said, why don't you go and learn about Reiki healing? And that's when I actually sort of opened my eyes to meditation. That was the start of it. Because I started learning about the body and understanding how Reiki works, where it's from, And then just went with open eyes, you know, when I walked into the door, when I met Simon. And yeah, that was the start of my healing, really.
You must have been ready though, right? Because it would have been so easy for you to push that away and say, oh, I'm not interested in this stuff. I don't want to know about it.
Yeah. Oh, because I trust my grandmother so much. And I think what hurt me the most, I've never shared this actually, I was making me emotional. What hurt me the most is seeing my grandmother be so sad about how she was seeing me, like, going through that. What impacted me to see her so hurt by me and my actions. It wasn't that I was trying to hurt her. It was that I was already gone, like, out of reality. I wasn't even there in reality. Like, I forgot that I was hurting the people I love around me. And she would just stay up all night watching me sleep because she was so afraid for me to, like, hurt myself. Yeah, and I trusted her that her decision for me to go to this guy was worth it. So, and if I didn't have her, I probably wouldn't be here today, I think.
It certainly sounds like a special relationship.
Yeah, yeah. It was. We've had our ups and downs. I might as well share this because I think it's disheartening now where I am in life. I'm doing what I love, like my purpose of sharing my story, and she just doesn't want to know about it. Purely because she's still carrying on, hurt from what happened to me as a child, and she feels like she's responsible for that. And I want to share that because I feel like, I mean, she doesn't want to listen to this. She doesn't want to listen to any of the things that I've done publicly because it just hurts her. Yeah.
Because she feels responsible.
Yeah, she feels responsible from the early childhood of, like, when I had no connection to my family at the time. Me and my brother were going through all the stuff at home. Yeah.
How often do you talk to her now?
We're all like special occasions, like birthdays, Christmas, all that. I'm very transparent with her and I'm very honest. So like I always make sure she's okay and, you know, I'll do my best to show up when I can. But, you know, it's just really for her to be ready around being supportive, like what I'm trying to do. Cause I think too, being in that generation, they don't quite understand that mental health is now a thing you can open up and speak about. Back then it was like looked down upon. So she's quite old school and wants me to go and become a nurse or a teacher or something. Whereas for me, I've taken that route of advocacy and creative freelance, and creating this whole, my own path. And I think she struggles with that. Yeah. And all I can do is just carry on with what's right for me and my purpose and speak highly of her. And yeah, that's what I do.
Would part of her be proud of what you're doing?
I think so. Yeah. She doesn't understand. I did ask for her permission the first time I started this journey. When I was with Voices of Hope, she didn't quite understand that one. I sort of, because I had never opened up about some of the stories. This was the first time I was opening up about stories I'd never told anyone before. Anyone, just me and my brother only know about the stories that happened to us as kids. And she just broke down and cried. And my grandfather who was around, he sort of takes it and he understands. His concern was, how's the reaction that you're going to get out of this? Like, I'm just worried that you might react because people were negatively saying bad things about it, which that wasn't the case. But she was just concerned more around that she let me down in my early childhood. But I just kept telling her, no, everything's okay. Like I'm in a good place to be able to do this. And cause one day she said to me, don't ever shy away from who you are and where you come from because you've got such a powerful story to tell people. And I remembered that, and that was before I even got to tell her about this campaign thing. So that's what I said to her that moment she burst down crying. Because I wanted to let her know that she always wanted me to open up and this is what I'm doing and it feels right for me as well. So, yeah.
When you do get to share your story, how was it generally received?
It's way beyond what I expect because how I was telling you before, I'm an overthinker and I think too much. So when it does come out, I tend to log out all my social media, by the way, and I'll come back like a day or so later. And then people message me, my friends, family going, oh my God, Whitney Lee, like, thank you for sharing that. I suffer from this and, you know, I never wanted to tell anyone, but I felt like I could tell you this because I'm just so inspired that you could open up like that. So I feel like I should with you and I trust you. And Yeah, and then people asking me for advice, like, how do I get out of this? And I was just so blown away. Yeah. So that's when I knew that I was doing the right thing.
Yeah. And it's lovely, isn't it, that when we're vulnerable and we share, and it takes courage to share, and we get that sort of love or affection or respect or understanding and empathy in return, it makes us think, yeah, man, that was worth it. I know now that I've done the right thing, or I've been authentic to the message that I want to put out there. Is that how you're feeling?
Yeah, definitely. Because I tend to get in my thoughts about it beforehand. I tend to try and pull myself out of the situation and be like, oh, too much, too much. And I usually have nightmares because the night before I'm thinking I'm in my PJs outside or I'm naked in public. That's my dreams. It's my way of feeling exposed. That's how I see things. And I'm like, oh no, you know, I don't think this is a good idea. But in the end, it always ends up being way more positive than what it really is in my head. And I just need to keep thinking back that this is meaningful and that, not to worry and that it's gonna help others.
Yeah, you'll be helping so many people. And it comes back to the three magic words for me, which is vulnerability builds trust.
Yes.
Exactly. There will be so many people that will see you speak and they'll be listening to our conversation and they'll be thinking, yeah, man, I can identify with this. I've been in these positions. I know what it feels like. And it's comforting to know that there are people out there who are prepared to open up and to talk, because there's that emotional contagion aspect where what you're doing, Whitney Lee, is that you're giving permission for others to share their stories and maybe be a little brave and to open up about how they're going. And in so doing,
they're
getting things off their chest and they're healing.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of people out there too that say to me, this is very common, and I also went through this myself, the medication is not working. And I say that you've tried alternative therapy. And I said, yes, I did. And they said, well, where did you go? Who did you go and see? Can I have their number? And I was like, yep, sure. And then I tell them all the time, study it before you go, because I want you to feel comfortable instead of walking into something and you're just over, like, stimulated by it. And you're like, what is this? Because not everybody's going to agree that Reiki will work for them. And it is quite a spiritual practice. But I will say, because it's not scientifically proven yet, it really does help people. And I think it's way better than medication. I find medication for myself was just a bandage placed on something that wasn't actually getting fixed. But not only that, it was only making my symptoms worse if I stopped taking them, like the spaced out, the depersonalization, like the feeling of feeling really like not all there and you just can't feel your body. And that's what the medication would do to me. And it was too much. And that's, I think it pushed me towards suicidal ideation because that was making it more intense. And that's when I was like, oh, stuff it. I'll take more than I should. And that's when the OD overdosing started happening.
What are you really thankful for in your life?
Me? Oh, I do this every day. So whenever I wake up, I have a shower and then I'll do a karakia and a prayer as a way of grounding myself for the day and obviously protecting myself from any energy that I might pick up through the day. And then I will do my 10 gratitudes around my living space, the people that are surround me, and more so where I am in life and where I'm at. And I try and do about 10. Yeah, and if I can't do 10, it's right. I'll just keep doing some more during the day, maybe when I'm eating yummy food.
There's so much that we can be thankful for if we stop and take notice of it, eh?
Yeah, I think just putting them into routine that's why I do my showers. I think showers is one thing that got me out of my depression. I used to sleep for days. I would not eat. I became anorexic. I was very underweight because I wouldn't eat. I'd sleep all day. Yeah, like I stopped going to work, so that's what I'll do is sleep all day. And so my one of my good friends, still a good friend of mine, she's an occupational therapist. She came to the hospital one day after I tried to commit suicide. I was on in ICU. And she said, look, let's write a list for you when we go back home and I want to make sure you get this done so that I don't see you back in the hospital again. And she wrote out the list and the number one thing was go for a shower. And whenever I think of her, I thought of going for a shower. And now it's part of my life. Like, shower, karakia, and gratitude is all in one go. Yeah.
You're setting yourself up for the day, right?
Yeah, and it's a cleansing thing. Water is so good for you. Like, scientifically, water is good for you. Like, when you drink it, and obviously when you go to the ocean, for example, the salt is really good for you. So, yeah, doing like water cleansing is important.
And tell us about the work now that you do.
So I do a bit of everything at the moment. I can't say I've got one job, but I'm currently studying business. So I'm doing a diploma in business management. I also do nanny work in the early mornings, to make my income while I study. So I look after two little boys. I'm currently a role model for Duffy Books. So we've got a tour coming up in August. So I travel around schools sharing my story and how Duffy Books saved my life in a way with my education and my learning and reading. And then I also work with artists, so I do promotion, PR releases and shows. I managed an artist last year, so I've just finished up with him now, looking into doing promoting shows. And I'm just doing storytelling, really, that's sharing my story as well through festivals and campaigns.
How did the relationship with Duffy Books come about? And tell us specifically as to why that relationship has been so powerful and so important for you.
Well, during my childhood, I was living in that tent, me and my brother, and I was around six, I believe, or seven. It was around that age. We went to school one day and Duffy Brooks had visited, and I remember the teacher handing out these free books. And I thought, oh, what the heck? Like, do we take these home? And they said, yeah, that's yours to keep. And me and my brother, we were very blown away because we didn't own anything. We only had like a bed and a tent at home. So for us to have a book was very precious to us. And I remember it being Kapai the Kiwi. And I would carry that book everywhere I went. I couldn't read. I was very like, I had a lot of learning problems at school. So they used to pull me out of class to read and stuff. So that book, they helped me read that. And the teacher could see that I loved reading and writing. So yeah, I just dedicated myself to reading after I had that book given to me by Duffy Books. And that stayed with me for a very long time. And it was only up until now I saw like artists that I work with do these school tours. And I was just curious. I was like, oh, that's very cool. And then I decided to just put myself out there and tell them about my story and how they helped me when I was struggling. And yeah, and that reading became part of my life when they first gave me my book.
And now you're an ambassador and you do lots of travel. How do you look after yourself on the road?
Oh, goodness, I need to work on it. It's terrible because I don't like staying in places that are unfamiliar. Oh, my Lord, I leave the light on at night. Like, I had a beautiful place just recently in Ohope. They got me a front beachside thing. And it felt like my grandma and granddad's house. But at the same time, I still had the light on because I was just, yeah, like I get a bit scared being on my own on the road, but I do go for a run. There's a beach there, so I went for a run on the beach there, and I do a bit of meditation when I come back from the school tours. But it's sleeping at night with the light on is not good. Because I'm scared of the dark, and I just like when I'm out by myself, I just, yeah.
So the light's comforting, but impacts your sleep.
Because the light's bright, you're sort of not sleeping in the dark. So it's the only issue that I have on the road. Other than that, I do look after myself, eat well. They look after me, Duffy Books. They cover everything and they're amazing. They check in every day. They ask me how did it go.
And what age group of children are you talking to a lot of the time?
Yeah, that's a good question. It depends on the school and their curriculum. I actually didn't ask this with Duffy, but based on my story, whether it's quite sensitive that some kids may not be able to listen to it. So I had actually spoke to a lot of year five and sixes, more that age closer to intermediate. And it made me wonder if that was based on my story, because it is quite a sensitive topic and a lot of young kids may not understand. But I had at least a few schools from the age of year one to year six. Yep. And it's a very diverse type of schools. You've got fluent Māori schools to bilingual to Christian schools, Catholic. Yeah, from 50 kids in a school to like 400. Yeah. So it's quite a lot, three schools on average a day.
Three a day?
Yeah.
That's busy.
Oh, busy, and I'm by myself, so I've got nobody on the backside. I'm just going to be at it.
So you're just driving from school to school, do your presentation, answer questions, engage with the kids, and then, hey, thanks very much, I've got to go to another one.
Yeah, definitely. And it's from, I was doing from Tauranga to Whakatane all the way through to, oh my God, I can't even think, just all the coasts, like, these little coastal schools. And
all around or Porikei and past there on Eddie's coast. But,
yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of travel.
Yep, that was all in a week and 2 days, if that.
But am I right in thinking you're spreading a message of hope to everybody?
Yeah, I believe so, especially with young Māori kids. You know, like I was very disconnected to my culture growing up. I mean, as a SIF kid, they tend to put Māori kids into the space of like the iwi, look after them while they're in that system. But it was very disconnection still, you know. I didn't actually have my family around. So for me, that's more important than trying to connect me to my culture when majority of them I wasn't really related to. So for me, like, I know a lot of these kids who may be going through similar things that I went through as a kid, that the story would be heard, but, you know, for them. And teachers often spoke up going, look, I know your kids might be going through stuff, so this would be very good for you. Yeah.
And we will have younger people listening to our chat, and even people who might be a little bit older who are really struggling, trying to figure out a way forward. What would be the one thing that you'd like them to know?
I think having one person that you know you could trust in your life to really open up to, I think just that one person really gives a bit of a shimmer of light. And from there, I think, you know, looking at therapies that work best for you, because I found that I went to see a psychologist, that didn't work, medication didn't work. So really studying on alternative therapies really help. And just getting yourself there while also having that support of that trusted person that you can talk to. That's just the number two things that were really important for me when I went through it.
Yeah. And you've got your brother to talk to?
I do. I'll be honest, like, men don't open up very well, but he is very understanding if I'm going through my stuff. However, with him, it's a bit different. He doesn't speak about his problems. He tends to just be quiet. And I know that emotional conversations are quite heavy for him. But with whatever I'm going through, he's very helpful. Yeah.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm probably one of the fortunate ones that I talk well and I get things off my chest, but I've got some of my really good mates, really close mates, who I know are battling because their wives or their partners have told me. So I'll go and have a chat to them and just see and I've known these guys for 35, 40 years. And I can tell that they are still struggling to open up and just tell me the real story. And it used to frustrate me. Now I'm at peace with it because I don't know if there's any more that I can do. And has that put me straight? Is that the right approach? Or do you think?
Yeah, no, you make sense. Yeah, you make sense. I think a lot of men, it's so hard. Like, yeah, I'd kind of wrap my head around it, actually. Like, why some can't open up as much. I know it's to do with there's an expectation for men. This is my perspective. There's an expectation that you've got to be the best for maybe your wife or your kids or anything. And because if you're not living up to your own standards, even though to them it might be all good, you think it's not good enough for yourself. And so they don't want to open up about if they're feeling a certain way because they think that they should be taking responsibility for it, if that makes sense. So being that role, and if they're not playing that role right, it's like they're not good enough for themselves, anyone around them.
I mean, I do a lot of, and have worked with a lot of men over the years, and there's still that perception. I think it's changing. I reckon we're getting better, but there's still an overwhelming response at times that it reflects poorly on me if I need to put my hand up and ask for help. That somehow I'm not the provider that I set out to be. I'm not the protector. Therefore, there's a weakness there, as opposed to feeling maybe a little bit more emboldened or enlightened and thinking, man, I can't do this on my own. I actually need some help. And if I'm brave enough to ask for help, maybe I'll find myself in a better place and I'll be stronger for it. We're slowly getting there, but I think, yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
It's also yelling. Yeah, it's also be a support person though. Yeah, if we want it more than they want it, then it's just pressure that gets transferred over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Delicate conversations to be had, but it's awesome that you're having them.
Yeah, definitely. And by seeing this through my brother, and obviously my dad had passed away to suicide, you know, I reflected a lot on like how mental health isn't really recognised as much or spoken about a lot because it's such a complex situation with men, you know, like with women they're a bit more open and emotional, whereas men they tend to be quite closed off, and that's based on like that whole role play, you know, like you were saying, like we're the other providers. And yeah, so my brother, my dad, that's how he ended up in getting into like drugs and stuff and not feeling like he was a dad to us. He was scared to be who he was, and he didn't want us to think of him differently, which is why he didn't visit at all. He was afraid to be who he was.
But you're not afraid to be who you are?
No, not at all.
Yeah, isn't it great?
Yeah, no, I'm happy with who I am today. Yeah, I'm very grateful. Like, always am grateful for waking up. I wake up and I'm just blown away by where I've come from. Yeah, because...
It's really, really nice to hear you. And well done on hanging in there and creating a really prosperous life for yourself, where now you're also giving back and contributing and helping others, and it's so sorely needed. Whitney Lee, thank you so much for being a guest on Take It From Us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy, and I am your host, Kent Johns. Please get in touch with us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Take It From Us. My story, your story, our story. Stream it, listen on demand, pod it. Your favourite shows are waiting on planetaudio.org.nz. Hello, kia ora my friend. I'm Susie Cato, inviting you to join me for New Zealand's favourite kids show on Planet FM. It's called Susie and Friends, and there's songs, stories and prizes, jokes, reviews, birthdays and shout-outs. And kids just like you. Go to susie.co.nz for more information. I'd love you to be a friend. Just listen to the radio Sunday afternoons at 3:15 for Susie and Friends on Planet FM 104.6. Susie and Friends.
Listen for the latest news, interviews, and the good music. Listen to 104.6 Planet FM every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. for Radio Akwaaba.
Or you can listen online at planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Akwaaba.
The diversity, the cultural diversity, the many languages, and the enrichment through all the different cultures, religions, faiths. I think that's fascinating.
I love going for really early morning walks under the Harbour Bridge. I love being able to get in my car and in 40 minutes being in one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. I find it really hard to think of what's missing in Auckland. I think you're pushing it there. Don't be so cheeky.
The people of this country, people of Auckland especially, are very, very friendly, and that makes you feel you're living with your kith and kin.
I just love our community. It's a sparkling city.
Loving Auckland, our diversity. 104.6 Planet FM.
Take It From Us brings you real stories from real people, sharing their experiences of mental distress and journeys to recovery. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. right here on 104.6 Planet FM, or catch the latest episodes at planetaudio.org.nz/Take It From Us. It's a half hour of commercial-free music coming up next now here on Planet FM, taking us through to Samlyn Khmer with news, music and updates from Cambodia on air at 2:10.